Blog Talk Radio.
Limited Combat Sports Show. This is Rabble Rouser Rich Bergeron. And?
Oh, and your number one guy, the Tornado, Tony Pennycal.
And we're also trying to get Holly back on. Just trying to figure out what number she gave me that's the right one. I'm having a little late start today. Behind the eight ball. But we do have a guest lined up, female fighter, mixed martial artist, Avery Vilch. Hope I'm pronouncing that right. Holly knows her a little bit better than I do, so she'll be able to correct me on that when she gets on. But we had a big week for news. Of course, the big deal is the UFC Live 4. News that came out just before the fight, Nate Marquardt got thrown out because of testosterone came out. They didn't really know at first what was going on. We just knew that he failed his medicals. So then it came out that the failed medicals was a result of something that they knew about 6 weeks before the fight, that he had elevated levels of testosterone. So turns out, just like Chael Sonnen, he had been given permission to do the hormone replacement therapy. And I guess the situation with that is if you get permission, you can do it, but you still have to have normal levels before the fight when you get tested. And apparently he had elevated levels, and then a couple days later it had gone down, but it was too late to fight, obviously. But Dana White threw him out anyway. Said it's unacceptable, and called him a bunch of names, said he'd better man up and go out there and explain himself, and he did. And, you know, the way he says it doesn't really sound that bad, but if you consider the fact that he had elevated levels 6 weeks ago, which means he's training with elevated levels, you know. Testosterone replacement therapy, it sounds like, you know, what it's supposed to be. You get testosterone because yours is low, not because you want yours to be sky high.
Right.
So it's adds a lot of controversy to an already weird situation there. When we get to Holly, I'll have to talk a little bit more about the rest of that card. Turned out that Charlie Brennerman, the replacement for Marquardt, actually won the fight against Rick Story, who Marquardt was supposed to fight. So that made it a little more interesting. And he kind of had the look of the young Rocky Marciano, so it was a real Rocky story for him. The other kind of Rocky, though, Balboa. Because he came in from nowhere and ended up winning the fight. So it was a good card all around, despite the change of opponents. We also have another UFC event coming up this week we're going to have to talk about later, but we also have plenty of boxing news to chat about. I'm sure you probably heard Kimbo Slice has set his debut now. Do you hear that?
I did. I heard that last night, that they were finally setting up for a four-rounder in August. I was like, well, going to make money. You know, it'll be a side character. But here's the thing. Kimbo is a tremendous puncher. You know, he's definitely got punching power. But from watching him punch, yeah, he's got punching power that, you know, yeah, anybody he hits, he will have the possibility of knocking out. But could you see him, even after he trains a little bit, what is he, close to, what is he, about 40 years old now?
Yeah, probably.
Okay. So imagine that. You know, imagine you're trying to learn a brand new sport at 40, but you have a name. So, you know, they could try to move him fast. I mean, I'm sure, like, maybe his first encounter or so might be a guy that's literally going to just go out there and fall. But once he gets in there, and I'm not even talking about with the Klitschko's or the David Hayes or any, or even the Chris Arriola's of the world, I see him actually, he might be winning one or two fights. But as soon as he steps up to a guy that can remotely be competent, he'll get knocked out. And basically, if I was training a guy to fight Kimbo Slice, he'd be my game, my strategy. I would have a guy worth his chap. Kimbo's going to come straight in. He's going to be square up. He's going to be leaning forward. So anybody that can throw a good jab is going to be able to tattoo him with double and triple jabs. Set up a big right hand. You know, you're going to be able to hit this guy at will. He's going to be coming straight in like a, you know, a bull in a china shop. But he doesn't have, even some of the most aggressive fighters in history, your Mike Tysons, your Jack Dempsey's, your Rocky Marcianos, they at least had a little bit of the conditioning and the skill to go with it. You know, Kimbo's going to run out of gas. But anybody that's a good enough boxer will theoretically take him out. Using boxing skills and then eventually just tattooing them with a couple shots. They'll take him out.
Right. Yeah, well, I don't know. I'm one of those guys who just wants to wait and see before I make any comments on what he's going to be like. I know that I always said when he was in MMA, he would probably be a better boxer. And I can remember having that conversation because... When I said that, you had mentioned that, well, he probably couldn't fight in boxing because of his beard. You'd have to shave his beard. Remember that?
Yeah. Yes, I do.
So I don't know if she's going to be able to fight with that. But we'll definitely find out. August 13th is the date that he's going to fight. And I don't know whether or not he's got an opponent yet. I know I just heard like a couple days ago the news announced that he definitely has a pro debut date. But there was talk about having him fight another football player turned boxer. And since that's getting really close to the football season, and if we have a football season, I doubt that they would be able to make that happen if we have a football season. But if we don't have one, it could be for that fight or his next fight, depending on how things go. Because I would think if they don't have one by then, they're not going to have one.
Right.
You know, August is when we're starting into the preseason. So anyway, that's the freak news of the week. Actually, it's not really the freak show news of the week.
Yeah.
Ken Shamrock and James Toney. That's another fight that's separate. We're going to get Holly on to talk about that one. I just got her number.
Yeah, I heard James is one to throw his hands in the MMA circle again. I guess his minute and a half beat down wasn't enough for him.
Apparently they have some special rules for this fight, too, which makes it a little more interesting. And Ken Shamrock is getting older, getting up there, but he is interested in getting in there with a striker and a wrestler, even though that's probably more of a strength in that type of fight. So he's decided to have these special rules where it's 30 seconds on the ground, and then you get automatically stood up. And it's going to be 8 3-minute rounds rather than 3 5-minute rounds or 5 5-minute rounds like a normal regular fight or title fight would be. So it's kind of interesting, I think. But I don't think it's going to really favor James Toney. Number one, Ken is much faster, much lighter. He's going to cruise around the ring the whole time. Or the cage, whatever. They don't even know. This is the other thing. They don't even know what league, what venue, anything. No details. No date of when this is going to happen. So I think it's just going to be kind of weird. But get Holly on to talk about this. It's Ken Shamrock, somebody that she's pretty sure. She talks to his camp all the time, so.
Hello.
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 How you doing?
Excellent.
All right. We were just talking about Ken Shamrock and James Toney. What are your thoughts there?
I think if Ken can get him on the ground, he still has some pretty vicious leg locks. So he's got to get him on the ground. If he thinks he's going to stand and trade, I think it's a bad, bad idea, because for as big a man as James Toney is, he's fast. He's got fast, fast hands. He's got fast feet. He really shouldn't stand and trade with him. He should make it go to the ground as soon as possible, because even though it's been a little over a year, James Toney still doesn't have the kind of takedown defense that he can use against some of Ken Shamrock.
Now, did you hear about the new rules?
What's the new rules?
The rules for this fight are 30 seconds and you get stood right up.
Really?
That's the rules that Ken Shamrock agreed to. They're also talking now about 8 3-minute rounds rather than 5-minute rounds.
What?
Yeah.
I did not hear about that.
That kind of blows my mind, because I was just saying, they don't have a venue, they don't have a league that they're going to be fighting in yet, they don't even have a date yet. So to be talking about these kind of rules without having anything solidified, kind of makes me wonder if they're going to be able to get certified anywhere to have this fight. You know, they're going to have to fight on an Indian reservation.
And that's probably what's going to happen, and it's not going to be... I mean, I don't see how they will be able to... how they'll be able to get that televised unless they, you know, make a deal with the WWE or something like that, because we'll see a legitimate fight production putting that on. I mean, it's completely different rules from any state's athletic commission. So,
right.
That's bizarre.
The other thing we were talking about a little earlier is Nate Marquardt, of course, getting thrown out of the UFC.
Yeah, you know, I think it's strange that Dana White said that, you know, if he would man up and say what happened, then people would know why he got kicked out of the UFC. So I'm really curious about that. I haven't seen anything yet.
Oh, you know what happened?
No, I don't know what happened.
It's been he came out the next day, I think, and talked about it with one radio show, and it's been swirling around since then, but... Basically, they told him 6 weeks before the fight that they detected high levels of testosterone. So Dana White said that he knew about it beforehand and he had the chance to fix it, and he didn't. So he was training.
He was,
yeah, basically. But it was a story just like Chael Sonnen, because in this case, he actually did get it cleared. Dana White did know about it. You know, the commission did know about it. They had provided paperwork after his last fight, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So they knew that he was doing this therapy, but that didn't excuse him from having to come up and be there at fight time with normal levels.
Mm-hmm.
And he just timed it wrong, I guess. He had the weight cut that ended up sucking so much water out of his system that it made the levels higher, or at least that's what he says. So he just kind of mistimed it. His doctor screwed up a little bit, and they didn't account for the amount of water weight that would be lost in the weight cut. And he came in high, and the Pittsburgh Commission said, you know, you have to come in with a clean result before the fight, or you can't fight. So then Charlie Brenneman got bumped up and won the fight against Rick Story.
Well, and how dumb does he feel now? Because, you know, he was juicing for a fight with a guy who got beat by a guy who took the fight, you know, within an hour of weigh-ins so, that nobody's ever heard of.
Yeah.
So.
And, you know, supposedly he's out for good. But, of course, Dana White said stuff like that before and backtracked. So, who knows?
Well, as long as it makes good articles, good media, Dana White's going to say it. And then if it makes better media to bring him back, then he'll bring him back. So.
But to me, it kind of raises questions of, you know, like, what is the UFC doing authorizing this type of stuff? You know, because it's one thing if, let's say, you know, the guy really needs testosterone replacement therapy. The guy really has a problem. But there's also the other side of the story is a lot of these guys who have this problem where they need testosterone replacement therapy, it's because they've done steroids before.
Right, especially that young. I mean, he's pretty young to require testosterone therapy. It's not unheard of, but he's pretty young for that.
Right.
So I don't know. I don't know about that. I mean, usually people who require testosterone therapy, you can see it. You know, they look like they need testosterone therapy. So, I mean...
And the other side of it is, whether you need it or not, if you're going into training with wicked high levels of testosterone over the limit, you know, even though you're maybe not getting tested for the fight, you're taking it. You've got an excuse to take it, and you're doing it. You have an unfair advantage right there.
Well, and if you need it, that means that you should be deficient in it to begin with, and then you should be doing something like a testosterone cream or something like that where it's going to bring your levels to normal, and you shouldn't be at some crazy high level.
Right.
So
it's going to be interesting to see it's going to be interesting to see what they do with this, because I would think it should call for a lot of people to be saying that this, whatever happens with these fighters who do get exemptions, they need to be monitored.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like more stringent testing more often. And if they do come up high before a fight, like 6 weeks before the fight, when you're in deep training, there ought to be something that, prevents the guy from keeping up the injections and still mm-hmm. doing it when he doesn't obviously need it.
Right.
But I don't know how that works, whether it's even possible to get a perfect level of injection, bring you right near the limit, but you shouldn't be sky high over it to the point where you're still high, 2 days before the fight, 1 day before the fight, you're still high on the level.
So I gave him all the way to an hour before weigh-ins. Aw, crap, I'm still not passing.
Yeah.
Well, chances are, if you're still high the day before, you're going to be still high the day of. So,
right.
I mean, what are you supposed to do to get that out of your system? Start doping up on female hormones? I don't know.
Yeah, and the other weird thing is the way that Dana White has treated Chael Sonnen.
Mm-hmm.
Over his situation with testosterone, it's not all that different, except for the fact that he obviously was accused of lying about it to the commission. But other than that, he's been treated completely differently than Dana treated Marquardt.
Well, that's because Chael Sonnen came real close to beating the middleweight champion, and Nate Marquardt hasn't come near. He's fought that same person, Anderson Silva, but he didn't even come near beating him. So, there's a difference in quality of fighters, and Dana White understands the cha-ching of it all. So, there's a difference.
Right. Well, we've talked a lot about MMA so far. We have got a few minutes before we have to call Avery Vilch, is it? Or Vilche?
I believe it's Vilch. I think it's Vilch. You should ask her about her thoughts on Ken Shamrock versus James Toney. I'm sure she'll have lots of colorful things to say.
Is she not a fan of either one, or what's going on?
Well, no, it's not that she's not a fan. It's just that her first fight, I would imagine these fighters, when they have their first fight, they're very excited and they have all these great intentions. And she was so beating up on this girl. And I can't remember her, I think it's Kristen, she goes by Barbie Molina. And she was just beating up on her. And she clearly would have won the fight if there was an issue with the timer. They ended up having 3.5 rounds, which, of course, they couldn't do that. At first, they were going to call it a draw. At first, when they thought that they had done the three rounds, they raised Avery's hand as the victor. And then somebody said, oh, wait, that second round was short. So then they made them fight a fourth round, basically, or a third and a half round. And when that was all done, then they didn't know what to do with it, so they called it a draw. And now I noticed on SureDog today that that it's considered a no contest now. But I mean, that was her first fight, and it was and that Barbie Molina is the wife of one of Ken Shamrock's fighters and coaches. So it just made it a little controversial,
Yeah. Well, just getting back to boxing for a little bit here, I did want to mention we had a big news story in sports in general with the loss of Nick Charles, the boxing commentator for Showbox. And he actually, I didn't know this, but he actually started out with CNN. And he's been calling fights on Showtime for years now. He died Saturday morning after a bout with bladder cancer. And I actually had communicated to him when it first came out that he had that cancer, because I know of an alternative treatment, and I sent him a message. He actually replied. I don't know whether he used that stuff or not, but I would think that.
Is it called Noni?
No, it was actually called 714X. It's a non-toxic treatment that you put through your lymph node, and it cleans out your lymph system.
My eventually will-be brother-in-law is a doctor of naturopathy. I'm sure I'm not saying that right. And he's actually, in his field, I guess, pretty famous. He's been on Oprah and The View and whatever, Dr. Oz or whatever. And he has a company that does, I don't want to plug him or anything, it's not my goal here, but he has a company that does a bunch of supplements, and it's, they've got their own farms and things like that, that they get most of their products from, that they grow their own products to put into these on the shelves. Anyway, and the number one thing that that he would recommend for any kind of cancer is taking noni, which
I've heard
is
of it.
Like, and cutting sugar completely out of your diet, because sugar feeds cancer. He actually treated a friend of ours. He treated a lot of famous people. He's kind of the nutritionist to the stars, basically. But he treated a friend of ours that had breast cancer and put her on noni and mangosteen and told her to cut sugar completely out of her diet. And his products don't have sugar in them. So, and she's all better now. She's in remission.
Yeah, it's interesting because diet is a big part of 714X too. You got to change your diet. You got to take all the dairy out, and it doesn't necessarily exclude all sugar, but it says you should get your sugar from natural sources like fruit.
Right, exactly, right. But a lot of people will go and they'll buy, like another friend of mine. She had told me that her friend is like a father figure to her, had some kind of very advanced cancer, and it was really too late to give her any advice at all. But we told her about noni, and we told her exactly which one to go get, and of course she went and got the one that was less expensive that had a boatload of sugar in it. And it didn't matter because he was so far advanced anyway that he died like 4 days after we had the conversation. So it didn't, you know, it wouldn't have made a difference. But you know, most people, the average person doesn't understand nutrition. So had you maybe been able to convince him to take this stuff that you're talking about and follow the right diet, or if he had started sooner, because, you know, whenever something comes out in the press, it doesn't necessarily mean that they just found out themselves.
Right.
Anyway,
well,
I regret.
Yeah, we could talk all day long about alternative treatments. I've studied that for years, but Tony, why don't you give us your thoughts? You've probably seen more of Nick Charles than I have over the years.
Well, it is a huge loss for not just the boxing community, but for sports fan in general. Nick Charles, the one word I would use to sum him up was class. Nick did, obviously, as we discussed, the Showbox series. He also did, they tried to revitalize some shows on, I think, like CBS. That's 6 or 7 years ago, and I know he was involved with that. When he had gotten sick a few years ago, I can't remember at this point, but it was a pay-per-view card, and he did the play-by-play. And you could tell he was a very sick man, but Ring Magazine commended the broadcast for allowing Nick Charles to go out there and do what he, loved more than anything. And that'll be the last thing I remember. Nick Charles loved the sport of boxing. He was a sportsman through and through, but he was also a very classy gentleman. Very, like I said, a very big loss to boxing fans and also fans of, any type of combat sport. And he will be sorely missed.
Yeah, he was a good dude. Him and Steve Farhood called a lot of those prospect fights there on Showbox. And I've seen him a bunch of times there. He definitely knows the sport. But he actually had one of the models on CNN that was used eventually by ESPN, SportsCenter, when he first started out. And I was surprised to see that because I think it was a little bit before my time growing up. I wasn't interested in sports at that period of my life when he was on CNN. And CNN isn't really a sports news network at all anymore. I mean, they show maybe snippets here and there, but back then I guess he had a big show on CNN and got a lot of people interested in sports, and that kind of got spawned into SportsCenter on ESPN. So a lot of people say they wouldn't even have SportsCenter and ESPN wouldn't be there if it wasn't for guys like him. So he impacted the whole sports industry. when he first started out. He just ended up going into boxing more exclusively. So it's definitely interesting. We're going to get Avery Vilch on the phone. Did I get the right number?
I hope you have the right number.
Well, the first two I got from her, and then the last one that you sent.
No. That was the last message that she sent me, so hopefully it's the right one. She had jury duty today, and she's thinking that she's not going to get it. She's got a tattoo on her chin, so I'll have to ask her about that, too.
Jury duty. West Coast.
Hmm.
I'll have to try her. What's her record, you know?
Oh, I just sent you an email about that earlier. Hang on a second, and I will tell you. I think it's 2-5-1. Let's see. It is 2-5-1 currently.
Uh-huh. Let's try this little number here.
And I just got your email that asked me what my phone number was. Sorry about that. I'm in the mountains right now. Things get me a little slower.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Out there in the Rockies? Where are you?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, that's loud. It's a loud ring. Let's go, Avery.
Oh, no. We might have to reschedule.
Hello.
Thank you for calling Psycho Fitness and MMA. Please leave a message after the tone.
That was
really
good.
Oh, you got a free plug for business.
Avery, this is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bergeron calling. We're on the line with the whole crew here, Holly and Tony and all our fans listening, trying to get a hold of you so we can interview you. We'll try you back in a few minutes. Hopefully we'll get you. Sometimes my phone number, well, not sometimes, all the time, my phone number comes up screwy. It comes up different on everybody's phone, so.
Yeah, it comes up as not private, but something where I couldn't tell who's calling.
Yeah, it's like 1234, 0001234 on a lot.
Right?
So they're like, whoa, where are you calling from, man? They think I'm like out of the country or something.
Yeah, probably
wouldn't
get a few there.
If
I didn't know.
Well, it's because it's a Skype phone, you don't get many many features that a regular phone has. It's kind of cool because you don't need to block your number when you're trying to call somebody without them knowing.
Well, nobody ever picks up calls that they don't recognize anyway anymore. So.
Actually, I'm starting to do that just because I've been getting a lot of spam calls on my cell phone. I don't know why. Every time I get a number I don't recognize, I don't answer it the first time. I look it up online, and they always say, like, oh, this is like somebody trying to refinance your loan or whatever or give you better credit. So the next time I'll answer it, press on there that I'm interested. Then when the person gets up, they're like, are you interested in refinancing your loan? I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm interested in you losing my phone number. And then I yell at them, and it's usually pretty humorous.
Well, I answered a phone call last week. It was, like, from one of those companies, and they weren't even looking for me. They were looking for somebody else that I used to live with and didn't even use that number. So it was like, well, they're like, is Michelle there? I'm like, there's no Michelle here, first of all. And second of all, take me off your list, right? So 2 hours later, the same lady calls back. I'm like, I just yelled into the phone, I told you to take me off the list. You hung up right away. It was like, whoops.
You know what my grandmother used to do when we would get, back in the late 80s, mid to late 80s, he got a lot of the actual heavy breathers and crank calls and stuff like that. Everybody thought it was so funny to make crank calls back then. And my grandmother kept a whistle, like a referee's whistle, by the phone. And when one of those people would call, she'd blow the whistle into the phone and they would hang up. It would be very loud.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
You gotta try that.
I'm gonna
have to whistle.
Yeah, but that is a good idea that you look up the number afterwards. I get a lot of missed calls, and that happens to me. And you look up the number, and it tells you exactly who it is, usually. Mm-hmm. It's one of the advantages of having the internet these days.
Exactly.
Just Google it, and it tells you, oh, yeah, these are those people that are trying to get you to sign up for insurance or something.
Okay.
I want to get back to some news here while we're waiting. Let's just go ahead and go over the UFC Live 4 card. It was really a great night of fights. And I think actually even Dana White said it was the best, one of the best ever.
Yeah. It was one of the best ever. That was an express. A virtually free fight. I mean, as long as you're on the table. Sorry, I'm getting an echo every time I talk, so if you hear me stopping, it's because I'm hearing myself. That was a great card, and those last three fights were awesome. They were exciting.
Yeah, and the guys that we picked last week, me more of a favoritism pick.
As far as
Matt Mitrione, neither of us liked him to win.
No, and you know what? I like him a lot more now after seeing his little bio on there and everything. He's not nearly as annoying as he was when he was on The Ultimate Fighter. So, you know, maybe I was a little surprised that that Joe Daddy Stevenson lost. I was surprised. I thought for sure they were giving him a tomato can just to get him back, you know, on his feet and whatever. But I'm a little worried about his future with the UFC because I think he's going to be fighting in Gladiator Challenge or something, you know, after this because, you know, this is his fourth or fifth loss in a row.
Right, but I think he's like one of those UFC royalty type of guys, you know.
Well, he's a gatekeeper, so, you know, and I think that's fine and good as long as you have a win in there every once in a while. But you know, he separates himself from his family for like 6 weeks or whatever before a fight. And, you know, he has like his little maid's quarters or whatever that he goes and lives in for 6 weeks while he's training for a fight and everything. And I think that's just weird. It's weird and it's unhealthy. And, you know, you're going to separate yourself from your family. Your family is what strengthens you. You know, why would you do that? Maybe he needs to change that, you know, and get his family involved in his training or something.
Well, I think the reason why he's called Joe Daddy is he's got like 7 kids.
He's got a boatload of kids. I know. I mean, why would you? Well, maybe.
No, obviously, you know.
He has an excuse to get away from the kids. I don't know.
He's attracted to his wife, so maybe that's it.
Well, his wife is really pretty, so that's true.
So, you know, like Mickey used to say on Rocky, women weaken legs, you know. That
Richie would say it like that.
Well, I know that they say that they're not supposed to be intimate or whatever, like the day of the fight or maybe even the day before the fight, but 6 weeks, come on. That's just crazy.
Come on, Richie, you gotta say it like this. You gotta stay away from that pet shop game. Listen to me, boys. Women weaken legs. Yeah, but I really like this girl, Mick. Oh, I'm trying now.
That was an interesting little.
That was awesome.
That was one of those parts of Rocky that everybody just automatically believed, you know, and then everybody talks about it, you know. One of those little.
Well, I'm going to tell you two of my favorites right here. I'm not even fully with Rocky. I don't think Holly's ever heard these, so I think she'll appreciate them. Obviously, the guy that played Mickey through parts 1, 2, and 3 and then played the ghost of Mickey in Rocky V was Burgess Meredith. And we were sitting at lunch many years ago, and we were discussing Batman in the 60s versus Batman in the 90s, or the 80s and the 90s. And my one colleague goes, yeah, Danny DeVito did good as the Penguin, but nobody was ever as good as Burgess Meredith as the Penguin. And I'm being a smart ass, I just said, who? What? Which
I said he was the original Penguin.
Yes, he was. So my one coworker said something like that. I said, who? He goes, Burgess Meredith was the original Penguin. I said, Burgess Meredith, I never heard of him. He's like, you've heard of Burgess Meredith. I'm like, no, I haven't. He's like, yes, you have. I'm like, no, I haven't. And we went on back and forth for about 3 minutes. Then he's like, come on, he was in Rocky, he was this guy. And I'm like, I don't know who you're talking about. And I'm keeping a dead straight face. And then finally, out of nowhere, I broke, and then I'm like, come on, Rock, you're going to eat lightning. You're going to crack thunder. And I see all these Mickey lines. And then everybody broke into a laugh, and he goes, so, back to our original discussion. Who do you think was a better Penguin, Danny DeVito or Burgess Meredith? I looked at him and I said, who's Burgess Meredith? I never heard of him. Everybody died. He just stopped, and he just looked at me with his face. The other one, and actually, she's coming over to my house on Sunday, a girl that I used to train for boxing a couple years ago. She was just doing it for fun to keep in shape. And one of the first things she would tell me is, like, I'm right-handed. I want to use my right hand. I'm like, no, you have to learn to use your non-dominant hand. That's going to be your lead hand. That's going to be your jab. That's going to be your hook. You've got to learn to use it. Yeah, but I'm like, get in front of that heavy bag. You're going to jab that bag till it hurts 500 times without stopping. I'm doing the whole Mickey, you know, impersonation to a T. She'd never seen Rocky or Rocky II. All these lines I'm saying, she doesn't understand where this voice is coming from. And I'm like, you're going to jab that bag till it hurts. We did 500 times without stopping. Go! And she's looking at me. She's like, are you serious? I'm like, yeah, go! And I'm like, you will jab that bag till the bag says, I hurt. Don't hit me anymore. And she takes everything literal. She goes, but Tony, it's a bag. It can't talk. I said, because she'll be here all night then, won't you? I got two young kids I'm training now. And the one kid's going to be really good. It's only been his fourth or fifth session with me, and he's really picking things up. The other kid, he's like a bigger kid. He's more of a goof. And I always bust his stones because he's a big goof. And the first thing he's like, I'm left-handed. I said, okay, so I'm going to be training the southpaw. Yeah, but I feel more comfortable with my left foot first. I'm like, of course you do. And that's why I'm making you go the other way. Yeah, but I can't do that. And I looked at the other kid, and I was like, do you hear what he just said to me? He goes, you just said the word can't in his gym, and that's not allowed. Oh, no. So I got this kid like that, he's trying, but you can tell he has not a graceful bone in his body. And whenever he does something wrong, like I thought, like, we'll be working the mitts. I'll be like, okay, throw 1-2, and I'll throw like a jab at a left hand. And then if he drops his hands, I'll do a tap him on the side of the head, and he'll stop, and he'll be like, and he'll give me the face, like, oh, you almost got me there. Like, oh, you're sneaky. And at the first few weeks, I let him do it. And now, because what would happen in a real fight? Rich, I hit you with a shot, and you go, ooh, you're sneaky. I'm going to hit you with four more, you know?
Sounds like the kid needs to keep all the brain cells that he has.
Yeah, but the other kid, I just had him over last night.
When they're starting out punch drunk.
Yeah,
pretty much, I know.
But anyway, let's just get through this UFC Live 4 card, talk about some of these results, and then we'll try back Avery.
Okay, I'll be right back, okay?
Sure. We had Joe Lauzon. It wasn't really a televised fight, but he got the submission of the night. I think it was the only submission. Yeah, it's the only submission of the night. So he got submission of the night against Kurt Warburton. He's got a Kimura. Michael Johnson beat Edward Faloto by TKO in the first round. 18 seconds.
Wow.
I'm surprised they didn't show that. You know, you'd think they would throw that in. It's not like they didn't have time. There were a lot of decisions on the card, though, so that could be why. Also, they had Ricardo Lamas versus Matt Grice. Lamas won by TKO. Charles Oliveira and Nick Lentz ended as a no contest. Lentz got struck by an illegal knee, so he must have been on the ground. He got hit in the head with a bad knee and couldn't continue.
Oh, so that knee ended the fight.
Probably. Rich Attenito, the only hometown guy, or technically hometown guy, because I think he trains with Mark Della Grotta in Boston. He beat Daniel Roberts by decision. The other two Boston guys, Christian Moorcraft and John Howard, were on the losing end. Moorcraft looked really bad. Just didn't keep his hands up. He was out of gas in the second round and just got pummeled by Mitrione.
That's what you get when you tell a guy that's on a 4 or 5 fight winning streak that his punches are weak ass pity pats. He found out, no, they're not.
Yeah, he just he needs a smoother boxing game. You know, you go in there with a guy like Mitrione, you should have your boxing up to par. And he's more of a wrestler type, and he just couldn't do much with the wrestling. He had Mitrione down a couple times, but Mitrione just seemed like he was breathing better, too. Mitrione was tired and gassed out at a couple points, but he was seemed like he was, you know, just getting the better punches off and breathing better. Just a slight bit more conditioned than Kraft.
Well, look
at Christian Moorcraft's
body.
Really.
It looked like he got deflated.
Yeah. Well, when I first saw him fight in Massachusetts, I was just like, wow. You know, I heard so much good things about this guy and his fighting skills. And he had never done anything before. Like, he had been a wrestler before, but he had never done any fighting before starting out in Massachusetts. And then he just went up to, like, 6-0 all of a sudden. And you took one look at him, and you were just like, oh, this guy's a fighter? I mean, he doesn't look like he can fight. He looks like he's fat and out of shape.
Yeah,
well, But, you know, he's got strength and skill. It's just he needs to have a more well-rounded game. He took so many shots directly to the head that I think that slowed him down a little bit, too. But he just didn't have the conditioning. He needs to really be like a cut fighter to really outshine his opponent next time.
Yeah, and it's good to have like a little bit of a fat layer, you know, not to be all ripped and everything, to have that little bit of a fat layer so that you don't gas so much of that little energy. But that was gross. You know?
Yeah, it's just weird. We talked about Joe Stevenson. He lost the decision to Javier Vasquez. And even though, you know, there might be a reason to throw out at this point, I think this is probably one of the first cards we've seen in a while where more people got thrown out before than after the card. And if they were going to throw him out, they would have already announced it, I think. So they're giving them
probably so. Yeah, you're probably right.
Tyson Griffin won against Manny Gamburian in the majority decision. That was a pretty decent fight. Matt Brown had a just unbelievable fight against John Howard. Decision. And you predicted it. You said you never know what he's going to do.
He's very hungry, and he's got these two kids. You know, he and his fiance just had twins 9 months ago. So, I mean, he's a good fighter. He just needed to work on some skills that he was missing or was deficient in, and he's shown that he has, but John Howard just didn't look good in that. I mean, he didn't look like he normally looks in a fight. So,
he didn't really play to his strengths, you know. I didn't see him throw a lot of kicks. You know, he just didn't. Take control of the striking game, which I think is his big advantage. He hit high up.
He was having good success with the leg kicks in the beginning, and then he stopped doing those. It makes me wonder if he didn't start out with some kind of injury or. You know, got an injury early in the fight or something. I don't know. I haven't heard anything about it, but yeah, he didn't look good in that fight at all.
Yeah, you know, that's what really pisses me off when I watch MMA, because even not really knowing a lot about the sport, that somebody who's watched it since it started would know, you know, I watch it and I consider the leg kick to the knee like a jab in boxing. Mm-hmm. You know, like you got to shoot it out there all the time. It's just the proven technique to wear a guy down and keep him off his front strength, you know, the strength of his front leg, you know, planting on that leg to throw punches and stuff. So when you're on the feet, you should be like throwing a leg kick every other second if you can.
Well, it's not like Matt Brown is he's got the jiu-jitsu game and he could take him down if he wanted to, but that's not really, you know, his strength is brawling. It's not it's not his ground game. So it wasn't like John Howard had to be afraid of throwing a kick and getting his leg caught and taken down. It's not like he had to worry about that.
Right.
Because, I mean, most of the kicks were unchecked altogether. So I'm not sure why he didn't keep that up. That would have helped him a lot.
Right. And probably the best fight of the night was Chet Congo versus Pat Barry. And we talked about how much Chet Congo sucked. he was sucking up until the point that he just came out of nowhere.
Well, you know what that was? That was pure muscle memory. That was him just doing what people do when they get knocked out. Just like going back to UFC 69, and I can't remember the fighter's name, but he was the one from The Ultimate Fighter that had the blue faux hawk. And he was one of the first fights in UFC 69, and he got knocked out. He bounced off the corner post and then slid down the corner post and then went after the referee's legs whenever the referee was standing over him to protect him as he was stopping the fight. And
right.
It was just something that they do, you know, that wrestlers will go for somebody's legs. They don't care who. And strikers, and Chit Congo is a kickboxer. Chit Congo goes for a strike. He's on the ground, so he can't throw a kick, obviously. So he's going to throw punches, and he just throws this mad collection of punches that happens to land because Pat Barry was standing in the wrong place. So that was
bizarre.
Well,
the other thing is a lot of fighters have misconception that you go for the temple when you throw a punch, you know, to get the knockout. And knockouts rarely happen when you hit a person directly on the temple. It's a good spot to, but the better spot is the chin. That's why they always say, you know, a fighter is measured by his chin sometimes. Mm-hmm. And there was actually a study that was done with these monkeys they moved on that would rotate their heads every second or something to test on, you know, what the brain slam and go would do. You know, this was years ago that I remember seeing the footage in black and white, and it was actually the white collar series. Two techie guys ended up doing this big like documentary weekly episode thing, the white collar, and they brought in this guy who was a scientist and studied all this stuff, and he showed the video of monkeys, and they showed that when you did it really quick and you rotated their head a certain way, very quick, they would just get knocked out right away, fall on the ground. So this guy concluded in his own study, looking at that stuff and talking to other fighters and looking at footage and stuff like that, that it's really the rotational force that does it, that knocks you out. It's not necessarily the soft spot of the temple or anywhere else on the head. It's when you hit somebody, their head tends to go sideways really fast. So that slap is so hard that it usually doesn't body out when they get hit directly on the chin, especially with like a hook. You know, an uppercut is one thing. You probably bite your tongue if you're, you don't have your teeth clenched. But when you throw a hook, it gives you that rotational force that just puts your lights right out. And that's exactly what Chet Congo did, whether he was out of desperation or, you know, he was aiming for that point. He just hit the perfect point, and Pat Barry was literally out on his feet at that second. That
his eyes were locked open.
Yeah, the only probably knockout that would have rivaled that was, I forget who he was fighting the last UFC there, but not even remember his name. Eve something.
Oh, Eve Edwards.
He got knocked out on his back, really. His head slammed against the mat. He was out for like a minute at least before. I mean, I was like, geez, they're going to have to take this guy out on a stretcher. But he got up.
Well, think of a few years ago when Rich Franklin was fighting Nate Quarry. And he knocked him out. And he went back like a tree that got chopped down. He was stiff, his eyes were rolled back, and it was weird. It was the weirdest looking thing I've ever seen.
Any given Sunday, they say, in football. And that fight was actually on a Sunday. It's kind of interesting.
Right.
it went that way for a lot of those fights.
By the way, I love your article. I thought yours was so much better than mine.
Well, it was kind of funny that, you know, we both did it. Did one on the same night. That was
a great fight.
And you covered a lot more of the fights that I didn't, so.
Yeah, but you're worth it here.
Oh, thank you. I try.
You did a better job of self-editing, too, because I looked at mine and I was like, hi, I published this.
So you're saying I have to edit yours more?
I'll try to do a better job editing. I know you don't really have time for that, but it was pretty bad.
Well, that's what
I was really sleepy.
You know, we're free-flowing. We don't have a big editing.
Yeah, those grammar out of care.
Yeah, but we do have to step up our game, you know, because we're going to be going to a paid subscription service within probably a couple of weeks. I know that the company that I'm going to go through is working out some kinks with their system, so they're going to have a WordPress plugin eventually, you know, and they said it was going to be a couple of weeks.
I was talking more about that.
Yeah. I don't know how much we're going to charge for it, but it's going to be like all our original stuff. And, like, the press releases and all that will still be free, but all our original stuff from all our actual writers, which is me, you, and Tony, pretty much. I mean, we get some contributions every now and then from other people that come out of the woodwork, but... But, you know, maybe, like... $4 or $5 a month, something like that, cheap to start. And then, you know, if it's successful, we'll keep it going that way. And
when you're out of your house, $5 a month is gas money.
No, but that's just per subscription. So, if we get 50 subscriptions, you know, that's pretty good money every month that we can start passing around. That doesn't cost me all that much for hosting and all that. Actually, the show right now that we're doing costs me more than hosting and the fees for our social community there, Fight Space Online. So it should be very offsetting for all that stuff. And then once we get to the point where so many subscribers, we'll be all set. We'll have an incentive to write more. Let's try Avery once again. We gave her a half an hour to figure things out. Let's see if we can get her on. Try both numbers, I guess. If I can get this to work. Let's go. Come on. And also, just real quickly, we have UFC 132, Cruz versus Faber this weekend.
Oh, yes.
Lots going on here in Vegas.
That's a pretty good card. I noticed that with the exception of Cruz and Faber, almost the entire rest of the card is the Almost and the Eusebies.
Yeah, that's interesting. We didn't talk yet about... The Strikeforce Challengers card last week. I didn't really watch
it. I can't comment on it. I missed it entirely.
Oh, well. I watched it. Unfortunately, our boy there, Randy Couture's son, did not fare too well. He ended up losing by 1 point all the scorecards.
I saw right at the end where they were striking the other guy won. And that was really the only
thing
that mattered.
Well, it's a good experience for him, though. He's very good, you know, and he handled himself well under adversity. A teachable moment.
Well, you learn from your losses, I would suspect. So that's only what his third fight.
Thank you for calling Psycho Fitness and MMA. Please leave a message after the tone.
Yikes! What's going on?
Oh, no, we're not going to have a guest tonight.
Well, that's only one number. Still have to try the other one.
have you been?
Tony.
Huh?
What? Holly just asked how you were.
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm fabulous. I'm looking out my back door at an awesome view.
You got snow on the mountains out there?
Not on the mountain that I'm on, but just down the road in Steamboat Springs on Mount Warner, there's still snow on that mountain.
Yeah, it's so weird being out here in Vegas. It's like 98 degrees, literally, is the high today, and that's like cold.
Right.
It's cold enough so that there's snow on the mountains, and there's snow, I don't know where this mountain is, but there's a mountain you can see way off in the distance all the time. It always has, seems to always have snow on it, and it's like, you know, when I went to school, they told you it goes down 3 degrees every 1,000 feet. When you go up a mountain, so it's like doesn't make sense to me.
We're higher than Denver, so we're over a mile high above sea level. And right now, I mean, we had some rain, and there's supposed to be a cold front or something coming through. Right now, it's 50 degrees in the little town that I'm in. And Mount Warner is quite a bit higher than I am, so.
Well,
it'll get 85 degrees here, and people will complain that it's cold or that it's hot. And I'm like, no, I'm from Houston. This is so not hot.
What's even weirder is when I came out here, it was February, you know, and it's still pretty warm in February out here. During the day, it's 70s every day, at least.
What's up, Southern California? Only it's the desert.
Yeah, well, it's not too far from the desert out here either. But, you know, when I came here I'm staying at this place with these big trees in the front yard, and the trees have no leaves on them. And I'm like, what the hell is this? You know, this isn't winter. Why don't we have leaves on some trees and no leaves on the other trees? And then when it started to get warmer, there's leaves everywhere. And I guess it's like same cycle of seasons, but different temperatures trigger different trees out here. It's just the way it is. It's kind of weird to me, though, coming from 4 feet of snow to that.
You show up in Vegas with your big winter coat on, and it's like 90 degrees.
But UFC 132, we got, obviously, main event, Dominic Cruz versus Uriah Faber. This is Uriah's first fight under the UFC banner, right?
Yes, it is.
So he's going to be looking to, you know, definitely make an impression here.
He's going to have to, even though he's got a great game and he's powerful and he's a strong wrestler and everything, you got to be able to catch the guy to take him down. And Dominic Cruz has got, like, a real spastic. He makes Keith Jardine's fighting style look, you know, smooth and normal. Because he's bouncy and, you know, he never gasses. This man does run out of energy. And, you know, when everybody else is doing a two-hour training, he does a four-hour training. And, you know, or whatever. And I think Uriah Faber is going to have quite a challenge on his hands. I know he's, you know, made himself, you know, somewhat legendary. But Dominic Cruz, he's unpredictable. His timing is weird. He's got fast hands. And he moves constantly. If he hits you, he's getting out of the way. And I don't know what his ground game is, but I think Uriah Faber's only chance is if he does manage to get him down, because I think he's going to have a hard time timing him, and I think he's going to have a hard time just catching him.
Right. I don't really know too much about either guy. I know I've seen him fight a few times, but. Didn't they fight at a higher weight before? I think Uriah.
They did. Well, not Dominic Cruz, but Uriah Faber used to fit 145. Now, he started at 135 when he first started fighting. And Tyson Griffin, who we talked about earlier, was the first person to ever beat Uriah Faber, and they were fighting at 135. No, they were. I take that back. They were not. They were fighting at 145, and now Tyson Griffin has dropped to 145. But yeah, Uriah Faber, I think he one of his main reasons for dropping to 135 is because he's kind of short. And he says he's 5'6". I don't believe that. I think he's like 5'4", 5'5", something like that, because he's tiny. But he's one of the things is he doesn't want to fight Tyson Griffin.
Right.
Because, I tried to interview him one time, and it was like when I very first started writing for Fight News Unlimited, and I had the interview in the bag. My referee friend, who got beat up by Uriah Faber at one point, got me this interview, and he was like, yeah, just email me your questions, blah, 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 and I mistake of including a question about what did you learn from your first loss against Tyson Griffin, and I never heard from him again.
He didn't want to answer that, huh?
No, and I told my friend, I was like, what's up? He won't write me back. I sent him the questions. Everything was a go. It was, It was great. And he goes, you asked him about Tyson Griffin, didn't you? And I was like, well, yeah, that's part of his record. And he was like, yeah, that's why he's not talking to you. Are you kidding me?
That's like asking Richard Steele about the fight between Mildred Keller and Julio Cesar Chavez. I actually did interview Richard Steele once, and I made a point not to mention that.
Well, if my friend had given me the heads up.
Another interview with him because of that, I think.
Well, had I been given the heads up, I would have not mentioned it. But I thought it was a valid question, because I feel like anybody who loses a fight, especially early in their career, probably learned something from that fight. And I wanted to know what he felt like he had learned from that experience. And apparently he learned not to talk about it. I don't know.
That's funny. Our wrestling coach actually gave us a good quote one day. We lost a tight match on the road. We're all back on the bus, and he says, guys, I'd rather you lose and learn something than win and not learn anything. I don't know if he came up with that, and I wouldn't give him that much credit. He probably heard that from somebody else. It definitely resonated. It definitely proved to be true. And I actually had probably one of my best fights was a loss in high school because I kind of got screwed by the referee. Everybody who was there said, I won. And this was our arch rival school, and I'm already wrestling over my weight. And I ended up not getting back points when I turned the kid over in my signature move. And I had him on his back, but the ref didn't give me enough back points, and I lost by like 2 points or something like that. But the kid's father came up to me after the fight, and he said, I beat his son. I did a great job. And, it was like, wow, that's pretty cool. It was probably the best I've ever felt after a loss. And I guess I just learned that you can never count on the referee to give you the benefit of the doubt.
Well, they say that on the UFC. Don't leave it to the judges.
Right.
I'm sure you've seen a couple of fights that were on there where you just knew that it was going to be one guy that won, and then the judges gave it to the other guy, and even Joe Rogan will flip out and, wonder if the judges are blind or whatever, if they were watching the same fight you were.
Right. Well, Dana White, we were talking about this a few weeks ago. He gave some Japanese guy who was on all the scorecards, he gave him a win bonus, like he actually did win. Dana came out and he said, I veto the judges. obviously, it's not going to appear on the guy's record that way, but that's an interesting way of dealing with that problem that I hadn't thought of before. But, probably the most outrageous one that I ever saw was Machida versus Rampage, when Rampage actually went over and raised Machida's hand. And then they gave it to Rampage. I was just like, you got to be kidding me. When that guy thinks he lost the fight and he's willing to admit it right after the fight's over, you're going to give that to him? You're the judges, I don't care how you score the fight. If you see that, that's got to make you think, well, maybe I scored it wrong if you've got the other guy ahead.
Right. Well, Bisping versus Matt Hamill.
Oh, yeah.
That was
horrible.
That was so clearly Hamill's fight, and how they gave it to Bisping is beyond me. I don't understand. I mean, Bisping spent half the fight in a headlock.
They at least had an excuse there. That was hometown cooking, what they call it, boxing. They called it for years, because usually the hometown guy is the favorite. You know, the judges are usually recruited from that area. So there's more of a likelihood, especially when you consider that was in the UK. You know, it's not just in the guy's hometown in the United States. It's overseas, where he's one of the biggest named fighters overseas in the UK. So I kind of could understand why they gave it to him more in that fight than with the Rampage one. But, yeah, that was definitely probably the first major screw-up that got a lot of press, but still has people talking.
Yeah, and that's been a couple of years. That's been like over 2 years ago, and it's still the first thing that pops in my mind whenever I think about really crappy judging.
Yeah.
But Matt Hamill's fault for leaving it to the judges. He should have finished that fight. Not that this thing is easy to finish.
I wonder why they never had a rematch between those two.
Because this thing changed weight classes.
Oh. Well, that would make sense.
Yeah, he went to a lower weight class.
Hey, that's why we have you on here.
I think Matt Hamill should drop a weight class just to see what Bisping will do.
Yeah.
So Wanderlei Silva versus Chris Leben.
Jeez, she took the words right out of my mouth. Yeah, that's a decent fight. Wanderlei Silva, or Wanderlei, as it's supposed to be pronounced. He's a local guy here in Las Vegas. I've been over to his gym and talked to him personally, but he's sponsored
by... He's a nice guy.
So naturally, I'm rooting against him for that reason.
You're rooting against who? Chris Leben?
Wanderlei, because he's sponsored by Zions.
Oh. Yeah, well.
But the other reason that makes me kind of wary of rooting for him is because he's been out forever. You know, he does train a lot. He does have his own gym out here. He is a nice guy, like you said. And he's been around forever, and he's like royalty. When Dana White goes on these junkets all over the place to promote MMA, he brings Wanderlei a lot of times because people recognize him everywhere. And Chris Leben, he's more of a journeyman type of guy. He's just been there forever. He's come up through the ranks and never really was that good to justify giving him a big title matchup, but he always comes in there and battles. He's notorious for coming in on short notice and just taking fights no matter what.
He defeats himself. If he's going to lose that fight, he lost it before he ever walked in that cage because he's a mental fighter. His psyche is pretty fragile, I think. You know, he beats himself. But the thing is that he's inconsistent because he's mentally fragile, and then Wanderlei Silva is inconsistent because he's older. His body's been through a lot of wars. You know, he's not that, like old, but, you know, compared to Chris Leben. And, you know, he's had 45 fights in his professional career, you know. And so he's pretty beat up. And so he's probably on the decline right now. So I don't know how hungry he is because he doesn't need to win anymore. I mean, I'm sure he wants to win when he goes into the cage, but I don't think he's that hungry. And I think Chris Leben is still a little bit hungry because he still has something to prove. Wanderlei Silva doesn't have anything to prove.
Well, he has talked about wanting to go for a belt one last time. And I think he has the capacity to be great again. But he's just been out for so long, you don't know what to expect in this fight. And I think Chris Leben is actually a perfect opponent for him because of that. Because he's gonna go to Wanderlei's strength. They're going to be punching each other in the face the whole fight, I think.
Oh, sure.
And, Wanderlei does those kind of fights. Chuck Liddell versus Silva fight.
Yeah, and seeing in that fight, I mean, Wanderlei Silva could have won that fight quick by taking him down and submitting him in some way because he's obviously a good Brazilian jiu-jitsu guy. And I doubt that Chris Leben has really improved on any of his ground game. I think he might have some wrestling, so somewhere along the line, but mostly he's a brawler. And I think that Vanderlei Silva's got that he's going to want to stand and fight, and so he'll stand and fight with him. But it's important to note that Chris Lieben has a head like a fire hydrant, so he's not afraid to get hit.
Yeah, he's known, too, for zombie fighting. Like, he's out on his feet, and he's still punching.
Exactly.
A couple fights like that.
And he's had fairly good success with that, so, you know, you can't really knock him for it.
Yeah, it's going to be definitely probably more of a striker's fight than a overall wrestling ground-and-pound type of fight.
I think it'll be fun to watch.
But we also have a bunch of other fights on that card worthy of talking about. I can get Badgley here right in front of me.
Tito Ortiz and Ryan Bader.
Oh, yeah.
Tito Ortiz was supposed to be coming into this fight, fighting somebody else, and I can't remember who it was, but it was somebody that's at his same point in their career, and I cannot remember who it is.
Is it one of the Noteras?
Maybe it was. But, it was somebody that's around his age, that's had the same number of fights, that, you know, it's the same, you know, it's kind of on the same place that Tito is right now. That person got injured and had to back out, and now he's stuck with Ryan Bader,
right,
who is, you know, clearly younger. His body's not as beat up. His, you know, even though he's got almost as many fights as Tito Ortiz, and, you know, not that many fewer, it's different kinds of fights, because Tito Ortiz was fighting, you know, back in the day whenever it was, you know, they didn't really put a whole lot of logic into it and science and, you know, and whatever. They just fought. And, you know, and he'd get on top of some guy and just beat the crap out of him.
Right.
And Ryan Bader, you know, he's a little more sophisticated fighter. He's, you know, mostly a wrestler, but he's been working on his striking, and he's going to be healthier because, I mean, you could see it in the last couple of fights with Tito Ortiz whenever he would jump up, where he'd jump up and bring his knees up really high. He's not jumping so high anymore. And he had some kind of back surgery right before his fight, his last fight with Forrest Griffin, and he thought he was 100% thin, and it was pretty obvious he would do that jumping thing that he wasn't. And then his last fight, his last win was against Ken Shamrock in 2006.
Yeah, but there's been a lot of hype about that. But, you know, it's one of those other situations where you never know what to expect when a guy is, or so he says, and, you know, he's going in there a lot of time off, but a lot of time where he's been training a lot, too. So,
and he trains at a high elevation, so his cardio should be good. And what Tito Ortiz doesn't run out of is oxygen. I mean, he's got plenty of energy, plenty of cardio. Ryan Bader's got pretty good cardio, probably not as good as Tito Ortiz, but I still know. I think Ryan Bader's got the advantage of being younger and less beat up,
right,
less broken. But Tito Ortiz has a lot more experience, so we'll see. This is one of those the youth against the almost, so.
Right. Well, I'm kind of rooting for Tito to lose just because he's one of those characters that's always been at war with Dana White, you know, especially the last few years, you know, before he was on The Ultimate Fighter.
Well, Dana White used to be his mayor when he first got started.
But, you know, they've had their war of words back and forth. He famously wore that Dana is my bitch t-shirt to a win. And I love when people have the guts when they're still in the organization to talk back to Dana White. But I would think it would be even more explosive once he was out of the organization. So I'm kind of waiting for that shoe to drop.
Right. Well, I want him to win just because I want to see what t-shirt he wears at the end of the fight. Because he's had some pretty interesting, I mean, you know, lately, the last few, he wears shirts supporting the troops and stuff like that. But, you know, he got a lot of flack for the shirt that he wore when, you know, he retired Ken Shamrock. And, you know, he's had some other shirts prior to that that involved somebody being his bitch or he did something to somebody's ass. We would, I don't want to go there, but you know, it's Tito Ortiz, and he's entertaining, and that's why for so long he was responsible for putting so many butts in seats. And
right,
you know,
well,
one of the people,
the last of the old core type of guys too. So.
Exactly. And it would be nice to see him not go out the way Chuck Liddell went out, you know, and not go out even the way Randy Couture went out. You know, you hate to see people retire on a loss. You know, you'd
right.
like to see them retire on a win, but usually when they win, they think they've got one more fight in them. So, you know,
I was very convinced that they had to have the Chuck Liddell versus Tito Ortiz fight, and it just threw me for a loop when Chuck retired when he did. I always mm-hmm. thought that should have happened no matter what.
Well, I think that if Chuck Liddell was given the opportunity, he would come out of retirement for this fight, because he said that on more than one occasion, that he would come out of retirement for a fight with Tito Ortiz. And I think that they should. I think that Dana White should give him that. But I think Dana White is actually concerned about Chuck Liddell, that, you know, if he gets knocked out again, there, you know, I don't know. It just seems like Dana White's too concerned to put him in the cage again. I don't think he'll let him fight.
Yeah.
And it's not like Chuck Liddell is going to go fight for King of the
Cage.
Well,
it didn't help that Chuck got married, too. I think his wife probably talked him out of that, too.
Right. He's got kids, you know, so.
Yeah. So, I mean, in the UFC, hooked him up with a nice job, nice cushy office job, even though we have probably no idea what he actually really does for work. He's
like Chandler Bing on Friends. Nobody really knows what he does.
I don't know. But, you know, either way, he shows up at all the events now. He's a good ambassador for the sport, but
mm-hmm.
it just it doesn't jibe well with the fans when you have an Ultimate Fighter show where it's traditional that the coach fights the coach, and you already had a situation where it took forever for Rashad and Rampage to fight after their season.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, they fought, and you know, they had to make a big deal out of that because of Rampage leaving to do the filming of the A-team there. But they actually did go forward with that, you know. So I thought after that kind of precedent was set that they would never have that situation again. But then, you know, so soon after that disaster, they have another situation. These guys never did actually fight. So kind of leaves a bad taste in your mouth. And this year was actually one of the worst seasons ever for the Ultimate Fighter, and the coach didn't fight again. You know,
I can't even remember who the coach is. Oh yeah, now I know. Yeah, Junior Dos Santos and Brock Lesnar.
Right.
Well, they will eventually get around to fighting though. But
But it's becoming a trend. It's like the Sports Illustrated cover, the jinx from the baseball teams and the football teams. I know, the football,
right.
The Madden. If you're on the cover of Madden, you're going to have a bad season. And then the Sports Illustrated curse is baseball, I think. If you're on the cover of Sports Illustrated, you're not going to win the World Series that year. But I don't know what to deal with these coaches lately.
I don't know, but I think Brock Lesnar is going to quite possibly experience another loss if he fights Junior Dos Santos when that ever happens, because that he's a lot bigger than I thought he was. And he manhandled Shane Carwin.
Right. But Shane Carwin is just sort of one dimensional. He's kind of past his usefulness, I think, in the UFC. He's a big guy, he looks imposing, but overall, I mean, he looked great against Brock Lesnar earlier on in Brock's career, but Brock's a lot more well rounded now. And I don't think he would have taken that kind of a beating if he fought him again today.
Oh, no.
But at the same time, you know, Dos Santos has unbelievable striking. He's not that imposing for his size. He's just a kind of a run-of-the-mill physique, like not super jacked, not fat and out of shape at all. So he's kind of in the middle there, that range. And he's got the perfect body type for all types of fighting, you know, mixed martial arts. Obviously, we gotta integrate boxing, jiu-jitsu, and you know, all the other martial arts that you can think of.
Right.
He doesn't throw a lot of kicks, but he's got unbelievable punching power, and he can hold his own with the wrestling and the stuff and takedowns and all that. So he plays to his game better than anybody I've seen. And Cain Velasquez, I think, is going to be a lot better matchup for him than Brock Lesnar. But
yeah.
Brock, we haven't seen him in so long, and he's always developing. So I just don't know.
His big Achilles heel is his stomach. It's not even anything to do with his strength or his power or his skill level. It's his diverticulitis, and that's taking him away from the sport more often than any training injury he might have.
All right. Well, I'm sure he's busy working on making chicken shit into chicken salad right now. He's had a lot of bad luck with that, and you know, he's gonna have to take some time off to recover. But who knows? I mean, it's kind of interesting to see a guy in that great of shape have those kind of problems. Makes you wonder, you know, what was the cause of that? Why did he end up in that? Well, my theory on him is he grew up on a cattle ranch, so you know, you've seen those pictures, I'm sure, with the cows on steroids. You know, they jack them up. Get giant.
He was a little guy. When he was growing up, he was so little.
So my theory is, like, all those cows, when they were, you know, on their steroids and everything, they're pissing out the steroid piss, and it's getting into the groundwater at some point. And he was probably drinking that, and it's kind of automatically steroids, you know. Unless his father just was like, all right, let's take some of the cow steroids, and we'll mix them with your food.
Because we need somebody besides that to pay for your college.
That's just like Sylvester, I mean, not Sylvester Stallone, but that's Arnold Schwarzenegger in his prime muscles that guy had when he was coming up in football.
Oh,
and
no.
And,
of course, he
had to be on some kind of either natural or unnatural steroids to get to that point. And I don't know if he's ever talked about that. He just put out a book, but it'd be interesting to find out what kind of stuff he was doing. And it could be something all natural. I don't know, but to each his own, I guess. Getting back to the rest of this card here, Brian Bowles versus Takeya Mizugaki. I don't know much about either guy. I know Bowles was
Brian Bowles. He's another one of those little baby faces that will whoop your ass. I mean, he doesn't look imposing. He doesn't look airy. He's not muscular, you know, not excessively muscular. But he's got a lot of skill. And Mizugaki, he's only had one significant win, and that's against Curran. I can't think of his first name. But everybody else of significance that he's fought, he's lost. And Brian Bowles has had some pretty significant wins, so I'm looking at Brian Bowles to win that one.
All right. Well, I don't really have an opinion because I don't have much experience watching either one. I never really watched the WEC at all, so. Kind of like the first experience for me watching these guys. The only time I ever watched WEC was when Jose Aldo was fighting because he's probably one of my favorite fighters of all time.
Good.
And I always tell people that he's the reason why I didn't enter the mixed martial arts myself. Because I saw what he did to Tub Swanson. I said, if a guy that little can do that to you in a cage, I don't belong in a cage. Brad Tavares versus Aaron Simpson is another one.
I don't know a whole lot about Tavares, but I think Simpson's going to win that.
Okay. Carlos Condit versus Dong Hyun Kim. I definitely agree with Carlos in that one.
Yeah, Carlos Condit for sure.
The Japanese guys have not done well at all in the UFC. And there's no Japanese guy I can ever remember having a championship belt in the UFC, unless it was before my time watching. So I'd be surprised if Hyun Kim is able to beat up one. The natural born killer.
They just don't have the body mass, I think. I don't know. I don't know what it is about them, but maybe they're not training in the same things that the Americans and who, because everybody else seems to be following the training plan of the American fighters because, you know, we started it. But the Japanese have their own training.
Brazilian started it.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, we put it together with all the other disciplines. I mean, you know, Well, maybe you're right. Maybe Pride was first. Maybe you're right. Yeah. Whatever. We made it popular.
Right. Rafael Dos Anjos versus George Soteropoulos.
That's going to be an interesting fight. George Soteropoulos is really coming up. I mean, he's winning some fights.
These guys are not huge names, but they're recognizable. You know, if you hear those names, you're like, oh, yeah, that guy's an MMA fighter.
George Soteropoulos was in the Ultimate Fighter, and I don't think he won that season, but, I mean, these guys, him and Dos Anjos or whatever, they've got almost the same record. I mean, they're so evenly matched, it's ridiculous. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think that George Soteropoulos has probably fought some bigger names. Dos Anjos just lost to Clay Guida in his last fight. And then that was back in 2010.
Right. And we have Matt Wyman versus Dennis Seaver. I don't know much about either guy there.
I like Matt Wyman because he's just cool, and he's handsome. Because he's handsome, Matt Wyman. But I think Dennis Seaver might be a little tougher. So I don't know. I'm curious to see how that one pans out.
Right. I don't know if these are going to be televised ones. Usually when they're at the bottom of the list, they're untelevised or on Facebook or something. But we also have Melvin Guillard versus Shane Roller.
I think that Shane is a tomato can for Melvin Guillard to get him back in the cage. And even though Melvin Guillard doesn't really need a tomato can fight, he needs something to get him back in the game.
He does
stupid things that, you know, a professional fighter of his caliber shouldn't be doing. He would be a champion already. I mean, he's got 45 wins. So, I mean, he should be a champion already, but he ends up losing to himself. He ends up, you know, getting popped on a drug test for cocaine or something, which he said, oh, that's, you know, that's not normally me. My dad died, and that's why, you know, I got that. What? You know, that So I think if by some bizarre happenstance, if Shane Roller wins this, I mean, he just put a huge feather in his cap. But I think this is really intended to get Melvin Guillard's confidence back so that he will start winning.
Also, Andre Winner, guy from the UK versus US Ultimate Fighter, is fighting Anthony Njokwani.
With a name like Winner, he better win.
Right. I think the last time I saw him, he was, I don't even know if I saw the fight, but they had a card over in the UK where, like, every UK fighter lost. And even he didn't win, being named Winner. I'll have to research that more to be certain on that. Don't take my word for it.
I don't even remember what I was going to say now, so carry on.
But we also have Donnie Walker versus Jeff Hoagland to round out that card.
Know nothing about either one of them.
Definitely two guys I've never heard of. No.
If you have just awesome nicknames, though, Hellbound and Eagle Eye.
All righty.
They should win points alone for their nicknames.
Yeah. Well, to make sure that we don't neglect to talk about any boxing this week. I do have to mention, we have a pretty big heavyweight fight coming up on Saturday.
We do. We have a very, very, very big heavyweight fight, which has forced one of your all-time favorites to come out of retirement.
Who?
Me.
Oh.
As we were doing the show tonight, I kind of got a little bit backed up last night because I was doing some things trying to get ready for this weekend. I had a chance to finish my article. And for the last 1 hour and 39 minutes, as I've been talking, I've been typing.
Oh, that's why he's so quiet.
Well, yeah. You've got to remember, I'm not as versed in the field of mixed martial arts, so when you talk about a lot of the fighters, I really have a hard time getting into it because I don't know the names like you guys do. Now, when you get me going on boxing, I'm going on history and stuff. And
that's when I'll get quiet.
Exactly. I had the two guys that I'm training now, that they're both 17-year-old kids. And the one guy got into it, like, his mother works at the pharmacy I go to, and, you know, he comes over, she's like, I never knew you were a boxer. I'm like, yeah, do you train people? I'm like, yeah, I'm a certified coach, actually. My son wants to get into it. So the kid comes over, and he's doing his first training session. So I asked him about his interest in the sport of boxing, because that's what he wanted to do. He clearly said, I want to box, not wrestle, not mixed martial arts, not jiu-jitsu, not karate, none of that. He wanted to box. So I asked him, do you watch boxing? No. You don't? Do you watch any fighters? No. I watch UFC. And I said, why do you want me to do it in a box? But I will. And then his other buddy comes over, and I'm like, oh, yeah. So he's getting all into it, and he's calling me sir, and he's really getting into it. And I'm like, do you watch boxing? No. I watch UFC. Oh, my God. And then I always talk to them, and they come over. I'm like, you guys watch the fight this past weekend? Yeah, we watch UFC. And I'm like, no. You're boxing now. You're in a boxing gym. I said, if I ask you if you watch the fight, you will say, yes, sir, I watch the Vladimir Klitschko versus David Haye fight, and I enjoyed it. Or, yes, sir, I watched the HBO boxing card. Because that's what I'm asking you about. I don't care what else you watched. But getting back to the Klitschko-Haye fight, I'm actually writing my review now. I have the intro all but done. Actually, this is funny. The intro is the second to last thing that I'm writing. I've written all their stats. I've written all their styles, their strengths, their weaknesses, the questions. Now I'm writing the intro, and then I'm going to write the prediction. So hopefully I should be almost done by the time we get off air, if not shortly after. So, Rich, I'll send it to you by probably 10:30 tonight, and that way you can have it posted so I can send it to all my loyal listeners and all my loyal readers, I should say. But here's what I'm thinking is going to happen. You have – the question is, has Haye gotten into Klitschko's head? Klitschko, the younger brother, Vladimir – is more athletic, he's big, he's strong, he's powerful, he's almost 6'7", 250 pounds, extremely agile, extremely athletic, hard, powerful jab, kind of reminds me of a young Sonny Liston's jab, and he's got a powerful right hand, a good left hook. He can knock you out any different style. Haye is going to move. Haye is going to, you know, sit there and use his, you know, speed, his, you know, and he's going to try to, you know, he's getting under Klitschko's head. What he wants to do is make Klitschko fight at a faster pace and run out of gas. Klitschko has shown where his conditioning is not up to par sometimes because he gets ahead of himself. The only thing he hyperventilates. Both of them have weaknesses in the chin. I think that's going to be more of an advantage to Klitschko because he is the much bigger fighter. And he's going to be able to reach Haye from a longer distance. So we're going to can Klitschko to win probably around the seventh round.
It's obviously going to be Haye's first major test at heavyweight. He's had a few fights, fighting all kinds of different. Nobody with that did fight Nikolai back in 2009, which is probably the biggest.
He's never fought a complete fighter like Klitschko. That's going to be a big test.
And guys like John Ruiz and Audley Harrison, who are the last two guys he fought, they're not really world beaters, even though he did get a WBA World Heavyweight title fighting Ruiz there. But and at cruiserweight is where he's had his only loss. He lost to Carl Thompson.
Yeah, he got
back in 2004. That was his last loss. The guy who was 32-6. That was his first chance at a major belt, the IBO cruiserweight title. And he got knocked out in the fifth round. And I don't know what kind of a build or skill level Thompson had at that time and how much Haye's improved, but I do know that Klitschko has the best jab in all of boxing.
By far, absolutely.
Considering his reach, his height, and the way that he can pretty much knock you out in a fight with the jab by just hitting you so many times with it that you just give up on your stool, which has happened to, I think it was Tony Thompson in the 11th round. He just got hit with so many jabs, he sat down, and that was it back in 2008. If I remember correctly. But he's had a few KOs. His last, actually, 4 fights, 5 fights, if you count Ruslan Chagaev, who was RTD in the 9th, were all stopped early. So, you know, that tells you something. But he also tends to stop guys late in the fight. So you never know how much of a chance David Haye's going to have to showcase his speed and his ability. That's the X factor, I think, for Haye. Just that he's going to be smaller and lighter, and he's going to be able to move a little bit better. Not that that really hurts Vladimir that much, because his jab is so good, he can hit you when he's standing still.
Right.
You know, so who knows? But I just got to give it to Vladimir. He hasn't lost since 2004 as well, and that was also a TKO in round 5. Ironically. Right. Yeah, but in recent years, he hasn't come close to losing. So all the unanimous decisions are knockouts. And he's been fighting all heavyweights. He's had 3 belts forever since 2008. February 2008, he's had 3 belts. And before that, he had at least 2 belts going all the way back to 2005. So he's used to dominating the heavyweight division. And I don't think Haye's ever faced a guy like that. So he's going to be way out of his league, and it's really going to take a miracle, I think, for him to win. But you got to give him a puncher's chance, and you got to give him one edge, which is the ability to use the whole ring. But like I said, I don't know if that's going to be that much of an edge over a guy like Klitschko. It's just, you know, just so tall and so lanky that... you know, the jab for him is like a secret weapon. Even though everybody knows about it. And that, like I always say, the jab is my favorite punch. So I like a guy with a good jab, and especially a heavyweight where you don't see a lot of guys use their jab that well. You know, they're always headhunting, trying to knock guys out. Which I think is actually going to be David Haye's best chance of winning, is to get the knockout. You know, I don't see him going toe-to-toe with him for the whole fight and winning the decision. Just, I don't think it's going to happen. And obviously, being the guy with the shorter reach, he's going to have to fight inside more than anything. He's going to have to stay inside on Klitschko. Probably going to have to throw a lot of body shots. And I don't know if that's really going to bother Klitschko that much, or if he's going to let him. But we'll be looking forward to your article, laying it all out for us, as usual. Very technical. All right. And also...
Recap, quickly recap the fight card from last week on HBO. It was a pretty good card. One player that pretty much predicted the way it was going to happen was Tavares Cloud and Yusef Mack. Mack is a mover, Mack is a boxer, but he's a guy that he tends to fade later in fights. And I knew that, you know, and I even said it last week, Cloud was like creeping death. And I didn't think that Mack would be able to keep him off, you know, the duration of the 12 rounds. And that's what happened. You know, Mack did well the first few rounds. Cloud just kept pressing him. Finally blasted him a left hook in the 8th round and then forced him to the canvas. And referee made a very wise move in stopping it. Also on that card, we had the main event was Devin Alexander the Great versus Lucas Matisse. Fight was close, controversial. The knockdown Matisse scored, only knockdown of Alexander's career. More of their feet getting caught together than anything, but the fight was close. It could have went either way. I know some people thinking that Matisse won a lot of them, but the decision went to Alexander in his hometown.
Hmm. Yeah, it, Yusef Mack is one of those guys that you never know what to expect out of him. He was probably, you know, on a good trajectory there until this last fight. But, you know, it was a good opportunity for him to showcase his skills. Just didn't work out for him in the end. But other than that, we do have an interesting, there's actually a fight above Klitschko and David Haye on that card in Germany. It's going to be on HBO. Supposedly, they have it as the top billed fight, but it's a cruiserweight fight between Ola Afolabi, 16-2 with 7 knockouts, and Terry Dunstan, 24-3 with 14 knockouts, and that's for the WBO Intercontinental Cruiserweight title. But obviously, the main event's going to have to be Klitschko versus Haye, and just make sure we get the records in there. Klitschko is 55-3 with 49 knockouts, and Haye is 25-1 with 23 knockouts, and it's for the IBF WBA Super WBA World Heavyweight title, by the way, IBF Heavyweight title, the WBO Heavyweight title, and the International Boxing Organization Heavyweight title. So four titles on the line there. It's going to be interesting. What title does the brother have, Vitaly? Does he have one, too?
I don't know if that up.
There's a
lot of titles. They got him beat up pretty much.
It must be the WBC. I don't see that one on there. The WBC.
You know, give me a minute, I'll find out. Give me just a moment, too, and I will find out.
Speaking of the WEC, though, WBC, I should say, the Rocky statue was in the news a few weeks ago. I don't know if we got really much of a chance to talk about it, but Jose Suleiman came to Brockton, and they set it all up. They were.
Yes, it is WBC.
The statue now is supposedly going to be modeled after the fight with Jersey Joe Walcott, Rocky Marciano versus Walcott there, the famous 13th round knockout. And originally they just had Rocky with his two gloved hands over his head standing there, which was from another picture of Rocky. And since he won every fight, obviously there were a lot of chances to get that shot. You know, hands over your head in victory. But now they're talking about making it into more of an action shot, it sounds like, with Jersey Joe Walcott. I don't know if they're going to actually include him. It would sound like they would have to if they're going to show that punch. I don't think they would just show it, just him throwing that punch out of nowhere with no other guy in the statue. So it's going to be interesting to see how that goes. But they did, Jose Suleiman, the WBC president, came up to Brockton, interacted with everybody, went to all the haunts there, the baseball field that Rocky used to play at, George's Cafe, which is where I first met Rocky's buddy there, Hank Catalia. Yeah, and there's just pictures everywhere there, all around that bar. So, and that picture itself is about this, about 7 different angles in different places around that bar. So I would think that's probably where Suleiman got the impression that would be the best picture to use for the statue. But there had been all kinds of controversy around that statue where, you know, it was supposedly going to happen and it wasn't going to happen. And they had a mold for it. They had a model and everything, and they couldn't pay the sculptor. And it was just all kinds of back and forth. And they kind of pressured Suleiman to get it done finally. And so he made plans to come up to Brockton. Now that they got that done, it's going to happen, I think, next year. So it's the official word out on the street. But I don't know what else is going on there. What's do you know of any other big boxing matches this week? I know that ESPN2 is going to have Friday Night Fights, but I didn't notice anybody huge on that card.
Going on this weekend. Let me just do it real quickly. We only got about 5 minutes.
I do know, I just got a blog up today about the third installment of the Friday Night Fights at the Cosmopolitan out here in Vegas. Just got another change of opponents. It was kind of funny because the last cycle of Friday Night Fights out here were at the pool, and it was just so windy. It was like kind of a pain trying to deal with the setup, and then during the fights, there was one guy's hat blew up into the second deck.
It was nice. Yeah, nothing really earth-shattering on Friday night. Let me look to see if there's anything else going on in the States on Saturday. Anthony Durrell actually is coming back. Anthony Durrell, who was part of the Andre Durrell. I'm sorry, this is Andre Durrell's brother. Got them confused for a minute. Anthony the Dog, 21-0, 18 knockouts. He is fighting Dante Craig, who was a former Olympian, now pretty much well past his prime. Dante Craig is now 18-9. 8 of his 9 losses coming by knockout. That's more setting up a bigger fight for Anthony with Alejandro Berrio. So we got that one going. Like I said, I thought it was a little more interesting with Andre Durrell, but his career pretty much is in limbo now after that pretty serious concussion. And that's really it. There's only one card in the States on Saturday night. That's the one with Andre or Anthony Durrell headlining. Everything else is going to be focused more on the InTech Arena over in Hamburg, Germany, seeing Klitschko and Hay. And that is the fight that it really has me interested. Unfortunately, neither of them are American heavyweights, but in their respective countries, Ukraine and / is about the country of Germany. Vladimir is very popular, and David Hay is very popular with the British fans. So, I mean, on a worldwide stage, this is a very, very big fight.
Yeah. Well, I think it's probably the best competition that Klitschko has faced in years, too. Not that he's been fighting bums, but, Hay's a pretty formidable guy, even though
Klitschko was a guy that renders other good fighters, average. Eddie Chambers. I know Eddie Chambers. I've known guys that watched him train. I've seen him fight in person. Eddie Chambers is a guy that, for a smallish heavyweight, around 210 pounds, and without big knockout power, is very quick, very fast-handed, and he's a guy that can frustrate you, using his hand speed, using his foot speed. And that was actually a good setup fight for Klitschko to fight a guy like David Hay because Chambers' speed and agility. And Klitschko basically rendered him almost impotent from the first round on and just really beat him up before he knocked him out cold with 45 seconds to go. You have other fighters. Toten versus the Tiger Thompson, a very southpaw fighter. What?
We just got the 90-second warning.
Oh, did we?
Yeah.
That's just what I'm saying. Klitschko has had a habit of taking good fighters and rendering them ordinary and then knocking them out.
Right.
The question is, can David Hay be extraordinary?
We'll see. I'd like to see an upset, but then again, I don't expect it. But
I would like to see an upset because I think that would really breathe new life into the heavyweight division. But the only reason I really am pulling for Klitschko to win this fight is because Hay's been such a big mouth. And he's been running his mouth, with the shirts with the severed heads on there. I want to see him get his.
Yeah. Well, we'll look forward to your article tonight. Next week, we'll have a couple more guests. Unfortunately, we couldn't get Avery on tonight, but what we'll do is we'll see if we can get her on a podcast later in the week. Holly, we'll be working with you to set that up.
Okay.
And you can be on the call, too. We'll figure it out during the week. And then we'll see who we can get for next week. We got a couple candidates in the works. We'll see if we can make it happen and let you know a little earlier next time. Till then.
Well, 10-second warning. This is the tornado, and I'm out. Later.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks for stopping by, everybody.